Chapter 7. Retro. When Trent had first read the concept for this week's Bakes, he had been skeptical. Retro, as a theme, is something he generally tries to avoid, whether it be in baking or decor. Vintage is one thing, but retro implies kitsch, and Trent cannot stand kitsch. Thank you very much. He makes the mistake of asking Higgins about the concept. Higgins reveals that one of his sons had suggested it, and Trent can't go and insult it because that would mean insulting Higgins's child, and that would utterly destroy the producer-talent relationship that they have going on, and... So Trent bites back his thoughts on the matter, and instead says that it's a good thing they didn't do something like a Tudor theme. But then Keeley suggests that they all dress up in 70s clothes for shooting. To match the theme, wouldn't that be cute? She has the gall to suggest that Trent wears bell-bottoms. Trent feels no compunction about putting his foot down over that. It's been years since Trent has had a Black Forest gâteau. He doesn't dislike the cake. He has no reason to dislike the cake. Each of the individual components are things he likes just fine. Chocolate, cherries, whipped cream, a lot of alcohol. But in his opinion, the sum is less than the parts. Trent may have said no to bell-bottoms, but Keeley is wearing a bright blue paisley dress. It's impossible to take his eyes off of her as she introduces the challenge. And as the Germans say, "Ready-in, steady-in, bacon," she says, clapping her hands a little. One of the other issues with a Black Forest gâteau, in Trent's opinion, is that there are only so many variations with what someone can do with it, especially if one is following the legal definition. The bakers don't have to do that, of course. No one will get sued for not including kirsch in their recipes, but it does put an inherent limit on creativity. But that's one of the many reasons why Trent isn't exactly thrilled by the concept of this particular bake. Sam's up first. Is he making a meringue? No, that can't be. Except that, as Trent takes a step closer, he sees that yes, he is. "This seems rather untraditional," Rebecca begins. "I did some reading, and it turns out that Sweden also has a Black Forest cake, and you didn't specify which one to do, so I thought, why not?" Sam is smiling at them. It's not quite as wide a smile as, say, Ted's smile, but it's a grin nonetheless. It's a creative approach. There's no denying that. Trent remembers hearing about the Swedish version ages ago, but it hadn't occurred to him to go that route. He doubts any of the other bakers had thought of it. He can't be mad at Sam, that's for sure. "I didn't know Sweden had a Black Forest," Keeley murmurs. "It's probably really pretty, what with all the snow." "It's a hazelnut meringue with whipped cream and chocolate. I'm infusing the whipped cream with cherry liqueur, though, as an homage to the original gâteau." Sam's smile starts to fade, and Trent realizes that neither he nor Rebecca have said anything. "How exactly are you going to incorporate the hazelnuts into the meringue?" Rebecca asks. It's not the question that Trent would have asked, but it's enough for the smile to snap back onto Sam's face. Nate is planning on doing a tempered chocolate sleeve surrounding his cake. It'll be beautiful, if it works. When they step up to Roy's bench, Trent can smell the scent of espresso powder, and he doesn't even have to ask to know how Roy is making his gâteau distinct. Coffee and cherries, always a winning combination. But Roy's in a shockingly chatty mood this morning. "This was my granddad's favorite cake," he tells them, as he whisks his dry ingredients in with his eggs and buttermilk. "There was an Austrian bakery by his flat that would sell slices of the stuff, and he'd buy us a slice to share when I visited on the weekends." Roy isn't looking at them as he speaks, but it's the most words in a row he's ever said to either Trent or Rebecca. Giving Roy a handshake after trying his gatto is the natural thing for Trent to do. Not only was his cake the best of the round, the sponges perfectly cooked, amazingly light, the ganache silkily smooth, the espresso shining through and mixing with the cherries in a way that set Trent's teeth on edge in the best possible way. But even outside the context of the show, it was something incredible. Roy accepts the handshake with a "thank you" that's so soft that Trent's unsure if the camera will be able to pick it up. "You'll have to give me the recipe for the chocolate bark," Trent says, and he means it. "Kieran would like it." "Fuck off," Roy replies, but he's smiling. After Trent's pulled away, the other bakers huddle around Roy. There's some hooting from Jamie about how Roy's now gotten two whole handshakes, and does that mean he's the teacher's pet or what? Trent can hear Nate say something about how it must be nice to get your hard work recognized, even though Nate won just the week before, which is truly the definition of being recognized. "I gotta try some of that famous chocolate bark now." And Ted reaches over and grabs a piece of chocolate off of Roy's cake. Trent can't help but hold his breath, wondering if Roy will throw a fit or swear. Roy just sighs. Ted pops it into his mouth, licks his fingers, and winks. Trent wishes the sight didn't make him want to stand up a little bit straighter. Even though they aren't in the tent, Trent can hear the absolute bellow that is Roy Kent yelling, "What the fuck is a Neenish tart?" This blind bake is sure to be interesting. Ted's dated men, by the way. Trent is very glad that he isn't drinking any tea at that moment, because he'd either snort it up his nose or throw it at Rebecca. She is grinning at him, wide and smug. She knows exactly what she's doing, and now he wishes he had the hypothetical mug of tea. "Should you be outing our contestants?" he asks, feeling relieved when his voice comes out sounding more judgmental and less whatever the feeling that his racing heart is creating. It's not a secret, according to Keeley. Apparently, he was blaming last week on the fact that both recipes were things he'd cooked the first time with his ex-boyfriend. All in a good-natured sort of bantering way, of course. Rebecca's smile curls even further, and Trent braces himself for whatever she has to say next. "And assuming a man is straight, Trent? Really?" Any other time, Trent would have told her to enjoy fucking herself. Thank you very much. Instead, he asks, "And why are you telling me this?" Very pointedly, not looking at Rebecca. "Crim. Welton." She takes a bite of one of the pre-made tarts. "He's the first person you look at when we walk into the tent." Trent feels his stomach plummet. He wants to get up and walk away, past the set, past his trailer, to his car, and just drive away, back to London, to his flat, and crawl into bed and stay there all day, and not look at his phone or his email or talk to a single person. He does not do that. He forces himself to stay in his seat. He tries to come up with something quippy to say in response, some way to just laugh it off, to suggest that it's not a big deal. He can't. He can't come up with anything. His mind is coming up blank. It's a new sensation for him. Trent hates it. Trent, I didn't mean to. Rebecca trails off, because she's not an idiot. She understands the implications of what she said. It's not. I'm not going to act on it. His voice sounds rough, even to his own ears. He forces himself to clear his throat. I know that. I would never think that you would. The conflict of interest alone. It could hurt the show. You know, the suggestion that I was favoring one of the contestants over the others. He's talking more to himself than to Rebecca, just letting the words that have been vaguely bouncing around his head out. It should help. Should make him feel better. It isn't making it worse. I know, she repeats. Trent vaguely wishes that it was Sharon, not Rebecca, to be the one here. But it is what it is. He sighs and picks up a tart. For all the anxiety that is rushing through him, it could be worse. It's only Rebecca who has noticed. It makes sense, he supposes. He and Rebecca spend so much time together, a function of the job, and it's not like Rebecca Welton is unobservant. But, she says, and Trent is already ready to defend himself, from a mostly unbiased observer, I'd say that if it looks like you're favoring any of the Bakers, it would be Roy Kent. I mean, two handshakes? That's borderline indulgent. His stomach hasn't quite untwisted itself, but Trent can feel his shoulders relax just a hair. It's what he deserves. They sit in a silence that is far from comfortable. Trent wishes he could get up and walk away, but that would be admitting defeat, and he refuses to do that when it comes to Rebecca or Ted Lasso. You know what I think? No, he wants to say. He stays silent. Once the show's done airing, you could probably get away with ringing him up for a round of drinks without utterly torpedoing your reputation. I could never, but it's different for men, isn't it? She's smiling, and it's not her usual sharp smile, not the smile she'd given him when they'd run into each other after he'd gotten the Metro column over her. It's the smile she gives the Bakers when she's genuinely impressed by something they've done, but can't say so, because it would ruin her carefully cultivated reputation. Trent should thank her. Instead, he takes another tart and grinds it to crumbs in his hand. Across the board, the tarts for the blind bake are good. Both he and Rebecca really have to split hairs when it comes to determining who should be in the top versus the bottom. It all comes down to who figured out the gelatin and the cream the best, Sam, and who didn't quite get the two-tone, May. Strong effort all around, Trent tells the Bakers, after Beard has announced the winner. He is feeling a bit more settled. He had been all too aware of where Ted had been sitting, had worked hard to make sure that he didn't look over at him, except for when Beard had said his name. Ted had come in fourth place. Solid. Respectable. This was a joke, right? Jamie says to no one in particular. Jamie had come in second. I thought tarts would be right up your alley, Tart. Jamie lets out a noise that is more splutter than laugh. Trent glances over at Roy. He is not smiling, but he's also not glaring, so Trent isn't quite sure what to think, in all honesty. Sorry I wasn't actually alive in the 70s or whenever these were invented. Roy actually laughs at that, because the day just hasn't been odd enough. It's not that Trent feels better by the time tomorrow's filming rolls around. He does not. The idea of having to interact with Ted makes him want to call Lucy, his agent, and tell her that he's changed his mind, the show was a bad idea, that he's over being on television, he'd like to go into hiding, thanks. He can only imagine what she'd say. Lucy Ronnie may only be 5 foot, but she can be terrifying when the loss of a commission is on the line. Instead, he tries to force himself to not stew over the whole situation as he prepares for filming. It's Baked Alaskas today. Trent isn't sure if his stomach is up for eating 6 different types of ice cream and multiple meringues. He barely could get himself to eat dinner last night, and he's still regretting that choice. He really should not have had a second espresso before hair and makeup. So, hold on to your disco balls, because it's time to get baking. Really, the little lines that Keely and Beard have to say each week to introduce the challenges just get worse and worse. If Trent were them, he would simply refuse. They start with May. And look, Trent's melancholy is not going to impact how he judges, and even without that, he'd be the first to say that he is shocked that May is still in the competition. She is a solid baker, but that's really all she is. He hasn't seen anything supremely creative from her, anything that truly wows him yet. And isn't that the point of the show? Each week, she does just fine, and someone else stumbles, and she gets to continue. If he's a little short with her, if he doesn't give her much of a chance to answer a question before lobbing another at her, that's why. A Banana Foster Baked Alaska is actually not a bad idea. But Roy used that concept last week on his eclairs, and Roy is undeniably a stronger baker than May. And the banana is going to be in the sponge, ice cream, and the topping? He asks. He knows he sounds unbelievably dubious. He only vaguely listens to what May has as a response to that. Let's Rebecca ask the rest of the questions. It's even worse than the time he'd had to bring Kieran to the set and had been sleep-deprived as a result. That time, at least, he'd had a reason to be silent and not fully engaged. Now, his broodiness, because he's sure that's how it'll be viewed through a television, is nothing short of indulgent. And Trent really does not want to be like this. Each time they step up to a new bench, he tells himself to stop it, to actually engage, and do more than nod and say a few inane words about egg white peaks. Each time, he does not. Ted's bench is the last one they visit, in some sort of twisted joke. He glances over at Rebecca and Keely. Both are looking straight ahead, as if nothing is out of the ordinary. It's a play on tiramisu, Ted is saying, and Trent can't help but perk up at that. It seems like everyone else is going for fruit with their baked Alaska, and the idea of something slightly different, it gives him something to hold on to. So, every bite will be tiramisu deliciousness? Keely asks. It's a ridiculous question, because the idea of making a tiramisu-flavored meringue is absurd. Not quite. And Ted walks them through his plan. A chocolate sponge, an espresso ice cream with bits of chocolate-coated ladyfingers suspended in it, and a ribbon of coffee-infused caramel, all covered in that classic meringue. The only one that sounds better is Roy's orange kiwi and yuzu fruit one. Trent listens to it all and has so many things he wants to ask, but after his earlier silence, he can't. It'd look odd. So he forces himself to be silent and let Rebecca remark about the ratio of coffee to sugar in the sponge and ask about how Ted plans to ensure that the ladyfingers are actually integrated into the ice cream. Trent allows himself to watch as he listens. Look at Ted's hands measuring out baking powder. Notice the way that only one shirt sleeve is rolled up. Marvel on the fact that Ted can smile, even as he chats with Keeley and whisks in the flour at the same time. Trent should stop watching. He's sure he's being painfully obvious, but it's either watch or talk, and he can't do the second, so... Ted snaps a piece of baking chocolate in half and holds it out in offering. And anyhow, the worst that can happen, I figure, is that it tastes too much like a cup of coffee, and no one ever complained of that when it comes to a tiramisu, right? Keeley snags the piece of chocolate, bites into it, makes a face at its bitterness, but takes another bite. It'd be so easy to take a piece for himself. Trent shoves his hands into his pockets and forces himself to ask a question about the rise of sponge cakes. Ted doesn't stop smiling at him. It's becoming ridiculous, Trent decides, as he sits still and lets Isaac fix up his hair for a talking head. He's not able to do his job properly, and he knows it. No one has said anything yet. But Trent is sure it's only a matter of time before Higgins pops his head into Trent's trailer and clears his throat and dolefully says that they're going to have to let him go. He's becoming a liability and all that. He's going to have to say something. It's going to be a complete nuisance, finding a new judge so late in the game, but it's the responsible thing to do. He'll say something to Higgins and Sharon, after they wrap up filming today. Except, of course, he doesn't say anything. He drinks 3 cups of tea, eats a fairly bleak sandwich, mentally slaps himself across the face a few times, and goes out for the judging. Maybe the wallowing, because that is undeniably what he was doing, helped. He is, not to brag, on point during the judging. His critiques are crisp, just this edge of brutal. Beard lets out a low whistle when he tells Jamie that his strawberry shortbread baked Alaska would be cute for a 6-year-old's birthday party. Trent is back, and he is almost happy. "You should have doubled the espresso in this," he tells Ted. "I'm not getting much coffee at all. The meringue is adequate, though." He even lets himself make eye contact, and Ted stares back at him, and that ever-present smile is there, and it takes everything in Trent's power to not look down. The taste of chocolate is still on his tongue when Roy is announced the winner. And really, Roy looks utterly furious when Beard calls out his name, mutters something about it being bullshit, but accepts Sam's handshake with a sigh. Trent is sure that the ensuing talking head will be the stuff of legend. And when Keeley has to break the news that it is, in fact, May who will be going home, Roy is the first one to go to her. The sight of Roy squeezing her hands, murmuring something to her, it should be laughable, but instead, it's almost sweet. Trent feels the best he has all weekend. Chapter 8. Caramel. The fact that Trent is running late to set on Friday is no one's fault but his own. He's sure he could figure out some way to blame someone else for it, but he's not that sort of person. He could say that he forgot to turn on his alarm the night before, or stayed up too late scrolling through Twitter or some other inane excuse, but none of those things are true. The reality of the matter is just that he woke up, took a shower, and then spent 45 minutes sitting in the hotel-provided robe thinking of nothing in particular, before he glanced at the clock and swore because he had to leave in 5 minutes and hadn't even gotten dressed yet. All week, his mind had been bouncing between a half dozen things, a state of affairs that he frankly hated. He waited to get a call from his agent asking him to talk with a capital T. That had not materialized, which should have been a relief, but oddly was not. He did his weekly shopping, got extra raspberries for Kieran, and Googled how to write a letter of resignation and sexual harassment laws. He wrote 3 different recipes for a column about Chelsea buns and deleted all of them. He took Kieran to her favorite playground and half-heartedly flirted with one of the other dads there. He read an article from The Sun that claimed that Rebecca was spotted on an intimate dinner date with the stallion of baking, Paul Hollywood himself, and spent a pleasant 5 minutes laughing about it to himself. He imagined what it would be like to tell Higgins that he, undeniably, most definitely, has some sort of feelings for one of the contestants. He imagined it going well. He knew it would not go well. He made sourdough. And finally, he returned to the set, just like he does on every Saturday, as if everything is normal. "We thought we'd lost you," Beard tells him, as Trent finally reaches the hair and makeup station. "We prepared for tragedy." Trent thinks that means that Beard likes him. "What are your thoughts on butterscotch?" Beard then asks, and Trent decides that maybe, just maybe, he won't worry about trying to unravel the mysteries of the man. He's saved from feeling the need to answer by Keeley's arrival. She's brought them all caramels with an artisanal pink salt, because the last thing they need during caramel week is more caramel. "Cheers! I tried to get catering to do salted caramel lattes for us all, but I asked too late and they couldn't." Trent feels a deep sense of relief. He tucks the caramel into his pocket. Hopefully, he'll remember it before it melts. It's not that Trent doesn't want to like Ted's caramelized upside-down pear tart. He does. It's impossible not to like it. Even before biting into it, he knows it's going to be faultless. The tart crust is golden brown and hasn't shrunk away from the tin, and the caramel is nothing short of glossy. Once it hits his tongue, all of his assumptions are confirmed. Next to him, Rebecca makes a noise that is so joyful that it has to be reflexive, because he cannot imagine her making that on camera on purpose. Yes, Trent likes Ted's tart. No, he loves it. And that's the problem. A bake this good, it deserves a handshake. Not granting one will create questions. It'll be fine, Trent tells himself. It's been almost a week, and he didn't get any calls from producers demanding that he step down from his position. He can shake Ted Lasso's hand. "Really impressive," Rebecca is telling Ted. "Poaching the pears with the lemon zest really brought it to life." not much more for me to say beyond this. And Trent holds out his hand. He can feel everyone's eyes on him. Why did he start the stupid handshake tradition? Without hesitation, Ted takes it, wrapping Trent's fingers in his. His hand is warm, and Trent realizes, with a jolt, that he never wants to let it go. Ted inclines his head a little bit, mouths something, a thank you, probably, and Trent doesn't look away. It's the one time he can, without anybody noticing. Someone, he doesn't know who, squeezes, and he can feel his whole body go hot. He should let go, disentangle, but Ted's palm is sticky, some leftover caramel, no doubt, and he just can't. Ted's eyes are on him, and Trent wonders if he knows. He has to know. God, what if he knows? And then their fingers are loosening, and their palms are separating. I appreciate it, Ted says. Trent is silent. Rebecca is already on to Sam's chocolate raspberry and caramel tart. Trent is able to catch up to her easily enough, extend his steps just a touch. Sam's tarts are also excellent, the chocolate and caramel blending seamlessly, even if the crust is a bit too dry. He aims to bite down on a raspberry, and his teeth catch his lip instead. Nate's attempt at golden caramel sticks to Trent's throat for the rest of the judging. Trent has to drink a cup of tea before steeling himself to talk to the 1-2 punch that is Roy and Jamie. Jamie has decided that providing a running commentary alongside Rebecca and Trent's judging is the absolute height of comedy. Trent hates it. He's sure that Roy loathes it even more. Throughout the whole thing, he's exceedingly aware of the sticky sugarness on his palm. Trent's never cared much for pecans, regardless of the preparation. He lets Rebecca do most of the speaking for this particular talking head, drags his fork along the latticework of the pie in front of him. His teeth already ache from the amount of sugar he has consumed this weekend, and they are only one challenge in. He can't imagine what it'll be like by Saturday afternoon. The back-to-back of caramel tarts and then mini caramel pecan pies and then caramel cakes, it's undeniably delicious and truly a masterstroke on Higgins's part, but he really should be scheduling an appointment with a dentist. Trent doesn't want to think about how long the wait lists for that will be. Rebecca finishes the script and takes a bite of pie. Her teeth, like so much about Rebecca Welton, are irritatingly neat. She hasn't said anything to him about the conversation from last week. How was it only a week ago? And Trent can't tell if it's because she has forgotten about it, or if it's because she genuinely does not care about it, or if they are playing some hideous game of chicken that he is losing. She has not said anything about the handshake, either, and Trent allows himself to think that maybe, just maybe, he's fine. "Slice of pie?" she asks. And Rebecca knows that Trent doesn't care for the nut. They were on the same Loose Women panel about how to Britishify American Thanksgiving classic dishes 2 years ago. God knows why. Trent had made his opinions on the matter clear. He gives her a baleful look, and she hands him a slice anyways. "How about Sam Obasanya, then? You only like him because he's been doing adaptations of your recipes," Trent tells her, because he can be just as bitchy as her. Rebecca shrugs. At least my recipes are comprehensible enough to be adapted. Trent would like to point out that his recipes are actually very easy to understand if one has a basic knowledge of baking, and that he's not going to dumb himself down to the masses, thank you very much. But that would just be giving in to her. He also would like to stalk away, leaving the pie behind, but once again, it would be giving Rebecca what she wants. Instead, he pulls every single pecan off the slice of pie and makes a small stack of them on his plate. When Nate's pies are last in the blind bake, he scowls, literally kicks his chair. Not for the first time, Trent reminds himself to keep an eye on Nathan Shelley. Saturday morning bursts open on them hot and sticky, nearly as humid as pastry week was, one of those summer days that the English countryside is capable of producing against the odds, yet more proof that climate change is, in fact, real and here to stay and all that. Anyone who has made caramel before knows that the outdoor temperature, especially the humidity, will have an indelible impact on the final product. Sugar is attracted to moisture, and the damper the air, the faster the sugar in caramel will break down, ultimately creating a softer, pliable product. That would be fine for something like a sauce, but today's challenge is asking the bakers for a cake with three distinct caramel elements, so hardened spun caramel, well, it's going to be expected from the final five. The solution, beyond magically changing the weather, is to cook their caramel for a little bit longer on a slightly higher heat. 2 degrees more should do it. To remove as much moisture as they can, or to dry the elements in an airtight container for as long as possible, or both. And that's not even getting into the potential issue of crystallization. But the bakers should know all of that. Trent says just that in his first talking head of the day. Sharon gestures for him to continue, and he does. He's never thought that much about it, but he supposes he does have quite a few more feelings about the intricacies of sugar than he had previously thought. By contrast, it's Rebecca's turn to be rather terse during her talking head. Trent wonders if she saw the correction that the sun had run. It had been less than tactful. When they get to Sam's bench, a bit delayed as they'd needed to refilm Rebecca's bit due to some technical glitch, his face has the slightest sheen of sweat to it, but he looks cheery enough. He may have replaced Ted as cheeriest baker this year. Sam's cake, as it turns out, is not a new version of one of Rebecca's recipes from the last few years. Growing up, if we wanted a snack, my dad would give us roasted peanuts, he tells them, whisking eggs into a mixture of dried ingredients that Trent already has questions about. So, I'm doing a cake based on different roasted peanut sweets we had growing up. He pauses, adds in some vanilla. The base is a peanut and chocolate ripple cake with a caramel frosting. And then I'm making a caramelized kulikuli, which are these roasted peanut snacks from Nigeria, and caramelized peanuts with spun sugar. And how are you going to keep the peanut flavor from being too overwhelming? Sam looks almost insulted, but brings forth a rather nice answer about how the peanut is meant to be central, but how each element will have different flavorings, and by the end, Trent isn't dreading it. When Roy hears that Jamie also is making homemade salted caramel and using raspberries in his cake, he clenches his fist so tight that Trent can swear he hears a cracking noise. I wasn't allowed to have caramel much growing up, Nate says in response to Keely's greeting. Dad said that if he was paying for braces, which he was, I wasn't going to be allowed to muck them up with candy. I never really got a taste for the stuff. Not the most auspicious start, especially as there isn't much distinction between a caramel frosting and a caramel drizzle, but Nate has surprised them all before. Ted's head is bent over his bowl, his brow slightly furrowed as he folds apples into batter. Trent has seen him without a smile on his face, but it's such an unusual sight in the tent that he almost has to pause. Keely does not, striding forward, poking her head in. "What have we got here? It already smells delicious." And there is that smile, and it shouldn't make Trent relax to see it, but that's where he is now. I know I slightly humiliated myself back in our first week together, and that use of "our" should not make Trent want to smile. He should be frowning at the memory of that cake, what with that slightly soggy apple cake I made. But redemption is a beautiful thing. So I thought I'd revisit humble apple cake, but jazz it up with some caramel accoutrements. And what will those accoutrements be? I'm so glad you asked, Ted tells Rebecca. He's leaning forward now, his elbows on his bake station. I'm going to do a caramel Swiss meringue buttercream that's real nice, if you don't mind me bragging, and some mini caramelized apples, and some caramel glass for decoration. He makes it all sound so simple. And how, Trent says, knowing full well that he will sound like an utter asshole after Ted's enthusiasm, are you going to ensure that the apple is actually evenly distributed in the cake this time? Grating half so that they're well integrated, and chopping the other half finely so you retain the taste. Oh, and a different apple this time. Honeycrisp. I hate to betray the glorious Macintosh, but I think it's right. Trent is only a little hurt when he doesn't offer them all bites of apple to try. Well, I think it sounds lovely, Keely says. She tells all the bakers that, but it always feels extra earnest with Ted. And, as increasingly she is, Keely is correct. Partially. The finished cake doesn't just sound lovely. It is lovely. The apple is very much present. Grating half of it had been an excellent edit, a choice that had made the cake just that extra bit moister. Yes, the caramel glass hadn't quite firmed up the way they should have had, a sad casualty to the humidity. But neither had Roy's hazelnut caramel spikes or Sam's spun sugar, so Trent can't knock points off for those. But it's the miniature caramelized apples that take it over the edge. He had been doing a second, silent, solo walkthrough when Ted had been working on those, making each one individually with a melon baller. The caramel on them is perfectly set, a flawless, glossy finish, and after Trent takes a bite, his teeth are stuck together from all the sugars, natural and processed, and it's worth it. Jamie's caramel is the most successful of the lot. None of his elements had wilted in the heat or become crystallized. It's almost magical how he had managed it. On technique, Jamie is the winner of the week, hands down, no question. Just like how he has been the best when it comes to pure technique most weeks. But when it comes to flavor and taste and enjoyment and heart, the things that really make eating a baked good the joy that it is, well, that's Ted. That's really the question, isn't it? Which is more important, hitting each of the technical metrics, the more quantitative measures of successful baking, or the more abstract qualities that cause you to close your eyes and enjoy each mouthful? And for all that recipes depend on the concrete, the weighed out, the measured. It's more about the experience, isn't it? Even though Trent has built his career on the former, has defined himself around it. And Ted, this week, had brought the experience. And in that case, he is the winner. Luckily, Rebecca says all of that, or close enough to it, so Trent doesn't need to be the one to, because if he had to, he knows the words would get caught in his throat, or he would become too passionate about it, or do something to cause all of them, Higgins included, to look over at him. Yes, Ted is the winner of this week. No questions asked. Trent begins running through what he'll say to Ted as congratulations, starts writing the script in his head. This part of the job only gets harder every week. When it's Keeley's turn to announce who is going home, she makes it into a whole production, big eyes, lower lip trembling just a tad. It's all very moving, walking just this edge of melodramatic while remaining effective. Beard, however, takes a different tack. As with most of his presenting, he keeps short and to the point, his voice betraying nothing, the emotion the same as if he was commenting on the weather, looking each of the bakers straight in the eye. Trent might inwardly roll his eyes at Keeley's tendencies, but Beard can be downright devastating. The baker going home this week is Nate. I'm so sorry. At this point, it's not about who has the worst bake, and they do their best to make that explicit to the remaining bakers, because none of them are untalented. It's about which didn't quite land the strongest punch. And in this case, it was Nate's. It was the caramel. As Trent had suspected, caramel frosting and caramel drizzle just are not that distinctive. There is the usual pause and silence as they all take in the news, and then... bullshit. Nate's voice is soft, but then he repeats himself, and it's louder the second time. Trent can hear a laugh. He thinks it's one of the camera people. Baz, maybe, or Ollie. Excuse me? This is bullshit. I'm one of the best bakers here. I won the first fucking week. That should count for something. And I always come in the top three of the blind bakes, except for one time, which is more than fucking anyone. I deserve this. I earned this. Trent wonders if the cameras are still on. They have to be. This won't air. It can't. It won't meet the BBC's standards for language. Nate. And it's Ted who moves in, because it's always Ted who is the first to try to comfort the losing baker, to say something, put a hand on their arm, make some sort of bad pun. The word is barely out of Ted's mouth, and Nate is spinning around. There is a tightness to his mouth that makes Trent wish he had the foresight to step in, to keep Ted from being the sort of man who wants to comfort others. You should have been the one to go home, Nate says, and his voice is nothing short of venomous. The amazing Ted Lasso. At least I don't have to go off and cry and breathe into a paper bag when I have trouble with my dough. Fuck you. The silence after that can't be more than a heartbeat, before Jamie Tart is jumping up and grabbing Nathan Shelley by the collar and shaking him, and Roy Kent is bellowing and there is utter chaos, and the cameras are definitely capturing it all, and none of it is going to be broadcast on television, definitely not, but it feels like so much longer. For Trent, that heartbeat lasts for eons, as the weight of what Nate says comes crashing down onto his chest. He looks for Ted, wants nothing more than to make eye contact, to mouth those two words, but Beard and Sam and an AD are blocking him, and he can't. Later, after everyone has cooled down, and Nate has had a talking to by multiple members of production, and Roy and Jamie have been given a lecture about physical intimidation against other contestants, and everyone has been offered multiple cups of tea, they film the ending huddle again. No one bothers hiding their stiffness towards Nate. Trent manages to tell him that he has good technique. It is the most generic compliment, and they both know it. He has completely forgotten the little script he had written in his head when he finds himself face to face with Ted. The only thing he can think of is asking if Ted's okay, and that will not do. Another excellent week, he manages. As always, Trent Krim, your feedback is deeply appreciated. Ted waits, like he knows that Trent has more to say. And he does, but he doesn't know what to say. So he does the first thing that comes to mind and gives him one of those quick half-pats, half-clasps on the forearm that always reminded him of an uncle for some reason. Ted does not remind him of an uncle. I look forward to what you have in store for us all next week, Ted says, once Trent's let go, before going to chat with Beard. Of course, Ted Lasso's arm had been tense, muscled. The man is constantly kneading dough. Trent's arms are much the same way. So are Rebecca's. There is no reason for Trent to think about it as he walks to his car. But it means he doesn't have to think about Nate. So he does.